Jimmy Go. We've got another edition of the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
And together, we're the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
2:05 on a Wednesday morning. We're back, and we've even got a guest.
Tonight, we're going to be talking about UFOs, fact or fiction, and our guest is Pat Packard of the Mutual UFO Network. But before we get to Pat, we have to go find him.
Oh, where is he?
Well, we're going to be doing the entire show tonight on location, okay. The Starship Enterprise.
Oh, that's right. So he's on the planet surface.
So we're going to have to beam up. Here we are on the bridge of the Starship Enterprise. Hello, Pat.
How you doing?
We're doing okay. Now, you're the regional director of the Mutual UFO Network, I hear?
That's right, yeah.
And what exactly is the Mutual UFO Network?
Well, what we are is a kind of a grassroots organization that studies the UFO phonomenon. Have a lot of scientists and other people that are involved in it. And just take a look at it as best we can, as scientifically as we can.
How did you get interested in UFOs?
Well, it's something that started when I was about 15 or so. I happened to see a UFO way back when, and you know that kind of set the whole thing off. A few years ago, I got back involved in it, reading a lot of books and what have you, keeping up with the literature.
So, let's talk about abductions.
What do you want to talk
about?
That's
what you
seem... How many people have been abducted this year?
How many have been abducted?
How many people claim officially to have been abducted?
Well, let's put it this way. The Roper poll estimates that there's about 3.67 million people that have been abducted.
How many?
3.67 million.
That's a city. That's an entire city right there.
Well, see, what you have to understand about the Roper poll is that it's not. It crosses over some other phenomena, so it's not quite accurate. It crosses over what's known as sleep paralysis, hypnagogic and hypnopompic dreams and things like that. So it's... I'm sure the number's quite a bit less.
Are there any characteristics that run through all the credible reports of abduction?
Well, there's a complete list of things that run through the credible reports of abduction. From beginning to end, it'd probably take quite a time to go through all of them.
Well, just hit a few of the highlights.
Well, essentially, there's a missing time phenomena that takes place. Generally, people see a light of some type. They could be driving in their car, they could be sitting at home watching television, they could be out on a picnic. Many times it happens while they're asleep. They see some type of a light that's unexplained, they feel a presence in their room, they get the sensation of floating or whatever. They're taken on board some type of a craft and they're given an examination and the type of creatures that are there. And the examinations are very consistent from one account to the next. After the examination, sometimes there are some other procedures that are done. They're very consistent, and they're told by quite a number of people across the board, all around the country and around the world. So then they're put back where they started from. That's kind of it in a nutshell.
Okay, what about this new movie that's out?
It's all the rage.
Fire in the Sky? Is that it? Ring of Fire?
That's the Travis Walton story.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you know anything about Travis Walton?
Well, I know, Travis Walton's case, first of all, all of them have passed lie detector tests, but the first lie detector test they passed was not a very accurate one. The only question that the people that were with Travis were asked on the lie detector test was, did you see a UFO? They believed that they did, and they answered that question. And we found out now that all of them have passed. Originally, we were told that one of the fellows, his test was questionable. But my understanding is there's a police report now that shows that all those people passed. Travis Walton was gone for 5 days. When he returned, he took a test.
Well, let's take it from the top. Who was Travis Walton, where and when did all this happen?
Oh, this happened, 76 in Snowflake, Arizona. These fellows were loggers.
Is that the name of the town, or is that just like saying?
It's the area, I guess. You know,
like that. Really
it's the area. I guess that's the closest town. I mean, they were out in a certain part of a forest logging, basically is what it comes down to. Where they get in their truck to leave for the evening's work, drive, turn around a corner, and they see a UFO right off to the side. Travis Walton gets out to investigate it. A beam of light hits him. The others panic and go down the hill. And unlike the movie, they all came back, and Travis Walton was gone. The next day, the sheriff mounts a search for him with dogs and horses, helicopters. They can't find him. He's gone for the 5 days. In the interim, they think that he's been murdered. They accuse these guys of murdering and doing away with his body. And then they insist they take lie detector tests. Like I was explaining, only one question had to do with the UFO. Recent tests were much more, they're more thorough. And the questioning was strictly about the UFOs, and they all passed those. Travis Walton passed two. By the way, he failed the initial test he took. Then he passed one. Now he's passed two here recently, and the other fellows have passed. There were seven altogether, and I think three of them have passed tests, and the other four have just come forward and went asking to take the test. But as of yet, they haven't taken it. I'll tell you, someone that we ought to call if he's up this late at night is Jerry Black. He's a local investigator, and Jerry actually conducted the test or was part of designing the test. The lie detector test is only as good as the questions you ask.
Well, so Jerry Black actually talked to Travis Walton?
Yeah, he talks to Travis and Mike and all these guys on pretty much on a regular basis. And that's he got in touch with Tracy Torme, who was the producer of the movie. And what he did was told Tracy that he didn't believe in the case. He thought it was a hoax. So Tracy gave him some information and said, here, you find out for yourself. And over a period of time, he came to believe that it was a true case. And once he had re-administered the lie detector test with the latest equipment and what have you, and they all passed, he had to accept there was a great likelihood it was true. I think he'd even say there's always an area of doubt. You know, you're not there, you don't have a piece of the craft, and you don't have a little gray alien next to you. So
some people do have pieces of the craft, don't they?
There's been a lot of rumors to that effect, and a lot of people have testified to that. As a matter of fact, a friend of mine named Lynn Stringfield has talked to quite a few people that have seen the craft or the aliens. As a matter of fact, the secretary at Wright-Patterson in 1959 was dying of cancer, and she signed an affidavit that stated that she, in fact, had cataloged all the debris, had seen the bodies of the aliens, and so forth and so on. But there are quite, we've got, I think Lynn has 42 people, some of them college professors, some of them military people and what have you, that have either seen the debris from the crashes or seen the craft. Some people say we have complete craft, or seen the bodies.
Patrick, are you thirsty? Would you like a cold beverage? Because I can go right over here to the other side of the bridge and get you the food and drinks inside. Get you a frosty cold one. Would you like one?
All right, I'll bite. Go ahead.
There you go, frosty cold one for you. Okay, we got a caller. The phone number here is 749-1444 if you want to call in and talk to Pat Packard, director of MUFON. Take our first call from a fellow who calls himself Satan. Hello, you're on the air.
Hey.
Hey, what's on your mind tonight?
What's going on, man?
We're doing a radio show. What's on your mind?
Not much, really, but about UFOs, man. You know, I've seen them before, but, you know, it's like when you tell people, they're like, you're crazy, you know. It's like, you know.
What have you seen?
They're like, yeah, you're crazy. I mean, I definitely believe in them.
You've seen a UFO, huh?
You talking about that Fire in the Sky movie?
Yeah.
I believe that really happened to the dude. I mean,
you do?
Yeah, definitely.
Good. Well, thanks for your opinion, man.
Huh?
Thanks for your opinion.
All right, man.
All right, later.
Later.
The phone number here is 749-1444. We're taking your calls, and we're going to call Jerry Black here in a few minutes and talk about the lie detector test.
Someone ought to kick that guy, see if he's alive.
Yeah, see if he's awake.
Yeah, really.
Hey, Pat, talk about the Roswell incident a little bit, because okay. Isn't that one of the incidents where supposedly the debris was brought to Wright Pat? Isn't that where part of the wreckage is from?
1947, outside of Roswell, New Mexico. Basically, at this point in time, let me go back to the beginning. The Air Force released a statement that a craft had crashed right outside of Roswell. The next day, they retracted the statement.
Outside of an Air Force base.
Outside of an Air Force base.
Saw a spaceship go down.
This was, at the time, it was the 509th Bomber Group, which was the atomic bomber wing, and basically most of the people that were there were had top security clearances and what have you. In any case, over the years, 400 people have come forward and either are first, second, or third-hand witnesses to the fact that there was debris of an unknown nature, that there were bodies, or, like I say, secondhand, their father may have told them the story, or they might have been a neighbor or whatever. It's pretty well documented. In fact, a new book will be coming out, I think, in the next 3 or 4 months at least. And there's supposed to be some great revelations in there. I think a couple of them will involve General Exxon, who gave some statements, used to run Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and basically made some positive statements about what had happened, more or less confirming the story. Also, General DuBose, who's...
So the Air Force said that they saw a flying saucer, and we have the debris, and then what'd they do?
They shipped
it
off to Dayton,
flown,
right?
Yeah, they shipped it off to Dayton, essentially, is what how the story goes. It was taken, was flown to an airfield in Texas by a fellow by the name of Pappy Henderson, who was a World War II ace. And,
is that Baba Black Sheep guy?
Could be. Yeah, probably is. Same guy.
Wow, Robert Conrad.
Yeah. Not Robert Conrad, but the part he played. It sounds like it. I can't guarantee it because I never watched Baba Black
Sheep.
Did
the Air Force, did they retract the statement? Or?
Yeah, they retracted the next day. And, some interesting things surround that. It's pretty detailed and quite a long story, but people in the town, the radio station was pulled off the air, essentially. Teletypes were sent in to tell them to shut down the story right away. They'd lose their licenses. There was a guy in town that was a mortician. He managed to come out to the base quite by accident after they'd asked him many questions about how you pack small bodies and how you would treat them after they'd laid out in the elements for a while. So the bottom line, he went out. He knew a nurse out there. The following day, the nurse called him in. And she was very upset, told him what had happened, and that she'd seen the bodies and that they were in the process of dissecting them, more or less, at that point in time. Other people saw the bodies packed in ice. They were put on a truck. People that were guarding the truck were told not to look, and of course, you tell someone not to look.
Right.
They looked, and they've told the story that they saw the bodies there packed in ice. And, of course, we've got stories of the people that have come forward, a lot of them anonymously, to tell their part of the story. But these witnesses are all documented. They've all come out. Their names can be used, and there's, like I say, 400 of them.
Okay, let's go to the phones again. We've got Jerry on the line. Go ahead, yeah. Jerry. You're on with Chris and Rob and also Pat Packard.
Hi, Chris and Rob. Hi, Pat. I have a few questions for Pat. Hey, Pat, you there?
No, I'm here.
Are you an ufologist?
Loosely, yes.
What kind of degree do you have to be an ufologist?
You don't have to have a degree to be a ufologist.
What kind of degree do you have?
I have a degree in business.
Oh, is MUFON basically a business organization?
No, MUFON isn't a business organization. What we do, someone in my position collects information, and what we do is send it off. At our disposal are people that are doctors. For instance, we have a group of people that are abductees here locally. A doctor runs that program. All we do is talk to people and give them the choice if they want to go to a regular psychiatrist, psychologist, or if they want to come down and talk to someone about this phenomena that's it's closer to it, whatever they want to do, that's fine.
How do you feel about the way the media portrays ufologists?
Well, the media...
Now, we're excluding Chris and Rob
here, excluding
right?
Chris and Rob, right.
All right, let's get that out of the way right off the bat.
Well, I think if you trace the origins of that back to the 50s.
Let me ask the caller something. Jerry,
yeah.
What have you seen in the media that involves a ufologist? Have you seen? I haven't seen many ufologists
like
in the news lately.
All wear glasses. It seems like this is a must. And you all have pocket protectors.
The glasses are about as thick as Coke routine. Bottles, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
They all portray you guys as being nerds and cockroaches and being very nosy and being very pushy.
Boy, well, this guy's tearing you apart there, Patrick.
Hey, Pat's a swinger. Take it from me. Pat's a swinger, all right?
Well, I've never been called a nerd before, so maybe I ought to thank you, you know? But the way the media's portrayed this whole thing from the beginning is pretty much dictated by what the government has told them to do. And there's a lot of documented evidence for that. If you go to 1953, there was a panel convened of scientists and what have you for the government called the Robertson Panel. And at that panel, they made recommendations basically to Project Blue Book, one of them which was is to ridicule anyone that came forward with any claims of UFOs. That's common knowledge. There's a lot of freedom of information to go along with that. They did have some legitimate concerns at that time. They thought that if the Russians could basically sweep in and use the UFO hysteria as a cover and bomb everyone or something akin to that, or they thought that all the phone lines would be tied up from calls coming in from UFO people and, you know, that a hysteria would be created and that would be work to the Russians' benefit and so forth and so on. But not only that, Project Blue Book and the people, most of the people that were involved with it will tell you they were told to come up with answers. They were, first of all, let me tell you, Project Blue Book had one secretary, one officer, and a part-time scientist.
Well, this some months. A congressional panel?
No, Project Blue Book was the Air Force's investigation of UFOs that the public demanded because of the sightings and a lot of the credibility of the sightings coming from airplane pilots and what have you. Dr. Hynek was told and others, Dr. Hynek went from a complete non-believer to someone that organized his own UFO organization called QFOS. In any case, he was told to dispose of these things as quickly as possible and use any plausible explanation. So many of the things that came in, of course, people would take any explanation, but extraterrestrials or interdimensionals or whatever these things may be. So they were quick to say if someone said, well, it's a green fireball or it was a comet or whatever, you know, they were quick to jump on the bandwagon. So a lot of people got laughed out of their jobs. I can quote you instance after instance where Blue Book didn't even investigate. So, and the people ended up being ridiculed.
I got another important question.
Yeah.
How many hoaxes do you come up against in a year?
Yeah, well, hoaxes, I really personally haven't run into one, but according to statistics, 1.7% of all reports are hoaxes.
Oh, it's got to be more than that.
No, it's not.
You mean a blatant hoax, an out-and-out, a guy hoaxes, with a frisbee and a camera taking pictures, as opposed to someone who just misidentified an airplane.
Well, when you take into consideration, most of the hoaxes are photographic hoaxes.
Well, then how many of them are ball lightning and swap gas?
That's not a hoax.
Okay, but apart from hoaxes, then how many misunderstandings and weather balloons?
Out of 1,000 photographs that were analyzed by computer, edge enhanced, and all those things they can do nowadays, 500 of them were proven to be hoaxes of one form or another. Most of them were not even disputed before they did that. There were about 400 and some odd ones that were of light phenomena of one type or another. Some were explained as ball lightning. Some were explained as, you know, meteors. Some were unexplained. There were 50 or 51 daylight UFO photographs that were unexplained and were ruled not to be hoaxes in any way. They could find no reason. When they computed the size of the thing and the distance from the camera, it pretty much fit in with what witnesses had said. So you have a large percentage of hoaxes. Just
we're going to get right back into this UFO talk here in a minute. We're going to beam back down to Earth here for a minute. If we can.
I can't get her to go, Captain!
There we go. We're going to beam back down to Earth here and play a little music. The phone number here is 749-1444. Our guest is Pat Packard of the Mutual UFO Network. We'll be right back.
Woke up this morning with light in my eyes and then realized it was still dark outside. It was
Yours ain't light coming.
Self, the man, the myth, the legend.
Yes, I did. I talked to Travis Walton and one of the writers of the movie, Mr. Tracy Torme, on a conference call about 4 months ago.
Did the movie stick pretty close to Mr. Walton's story?
Not really. Unfortunately, it didn't stick near as close as I figured. As I feel it, even Travis and Mike Rogers, the head of the woodcutting crew, who was one of the co-stars, actually, the movie, I don't think it sticked even as close as they had hoped for. It was not meant to be an actual documentary.
It's still Hollywood.
Yeah, Hollywood really took a much bigger part in this situation than I think they were expecting, and it certainly displeased me also. I'm happy to see that the movie was out because it is one of the first positive movies at the movie theaters on UFOs for a long time. I just wish the Hollywood aspect would have been toned down just a little bit.
Okay, when you talked to Mr. Walton, did you find him credible?
Yes, I did.
Okay, what was your notion of the man before you met him, just from hearsay?
Well, from all the reports that earlier came out, I was pretty much against the case. In fact, that's why I called.
So you thought it was a bunch of crap?
Well, I thought the case didn't stand up very well in terms of what investigators had found out originally back in 1975 on the surface, and I was a little concerned that they had decided to put this movie out to show the general public, and in my opinion, it not being a very viable case. And Tracy Torme told me in our first conversation he had investigated the case also, and then I should give it a shot and go around and do an investigation myself, which I did for about almost 11 to 12 months, making extensive phone calls all over the country, reconstructing the whole situation by talking to the Forestry Service in Arizona, and of course talking to Mike, talking to Travis, talking to the polygraph experts, all of them, talking to Sheriff Gillespie, just anyone that I could in terms of trying to reconstruct this situation that happened in 1975.
Okay, Pat likes to say that a lie detector test is only as good as the questions asked. What were some of the questions that Mr. Walton was asked?
Well, actually, Travis Walton actually took two tests under my supervision. He was given two tests because of the drug situation that was...
Drug situation?
There was a drug situation in terms of some of the debunkers who were trying to say that Travis was on drugs at the time. So when he was taking the one test, he wanted to take another test to clarify the drug situation so that he could prove in his mind that to the general public that there was no drugs involved in this situation, as others had speculated back in 1975. And so consequently, I ended up giving Travis Walton two polygraph tests, which delved into the drug aspect and also his observation of the UFO and the hoax aspect, too. We did check into one of the questions dealt with whether he was actually on his mother's property for those 5 days that he was claims to have had missing and came back from the UFO, and that question was covered. The fact of whether he had any interaction with a object that he believed to be a UFO was obviously covered. The facts as to whether he participated in a hoax either by himself or in conjunction with his brother or anyone else, that question was covered. So all the questions were very pertinent and very important in terms of trying to find out whether anything went on in terms of a hoax in the situation.
Can you still fake these lie detector tests by putting a tack in your shoe and then whenever you lie, press down on it so you feel a little pain?
I've never heard of that, no. I've heard of trying to breathe differently, as it was accused that Travis did back early on, but the computerization systems they now use on these polygraphs, they have really come a long way since even 1975, and they have come such a long way that the computerization system, as I understand from Mr. Gilson, who gave the test, makes the machines really much more accurate. But again, too, the questions are very important, and the person that actually gives the test still is a very important part of the test. You can't have some rookie in there giving the test as compared to someone with 23 years experience, so that's not going to jive up. Your accuracy depends upon the questions and upon the person that's actually performing the test.
Yeah, what some people just say that Travis Walton is just trying to make a quick buck?
Well, Travis Walton had all kinds of opportunities movie-wise, and this was confirmed by Tracy Torme to make a quick buck on this many, many years ago. This is 17 years after the fact. He did write a book early on, and a lot of people write books. You can't hold a person at fault for writing a book on a situation, but he's been approached many, many times long before Paramount got a hold of him about 2 or 3 years ago to do a movie on it. He actually refused to do it. In fact, he had an unlisted number for about 10 years because he was being bothered by people constantly concerning this case, and usually in a bad fashion in terms of feeling that he had perpetrated a hoax, just like I felt he did. But see, the hoax situation, when you really delve into it, just really doesn't stand up. I mean, here's a man that's gone for 5 days, claims he's gone for 5 days. All he can remember is 20 minutes. And believe me, the 20 minutes that he really remembers are nothing like what you see on the screen. They're very boring, in fact, in terms of normal abduction scenarios that people have been reliving under hypnosis and many, many other cases. So this is why the movie had a hard time in selling this to the general public in terms of being a documentary, because basically nothing happened on board that was really very exciting in terms to the general public.
Well, they just sat around and played pitch or something?
No, he certainly did not. He was on a table. He woke up from this table. He was feeling a lot of pain. He had humanoid-type beings that were hovering over him with instruments.
Hovering off the ground or
no,
just
not
standing around?
Like hovering, they were looking over him. They were leaning over him. Not in the air, leaning over him with instruments, and he jumped up off the table. He was not, obviously had been restrained. He grabbed what he felt was the closest thing he could get, which is a long tubular pipe. He tried to swing these at the beings, and they jumped back. Then he ran into another room, according to his testimony. He ran into another room. There was a chair in this other room and an instrument panel. He was then confronted by a human-looking being, a man, human size in terms of head, arms, and legs. Would pass for any other human being in a crowd, except that he had a glass helmet on. This being took him into another room in which there was a woman, human-looking-like being with sandy brown hair, and another human-looking-like man. But neither of these people had on helmets, however. The one gentleman with the helmet on left the room, according to Travis. The other two human-looking-like beings came towards him, took him gently by the arm, and tried to lay him down on the table, to which he resisted. He had continually kept trying to talk to these human-like beings and like, what am I doing here? Where are we? They did not respond at all verbally or telepathically with him. They laid him down on a table. The lady put a mask-like contraption over his face, and he was gone in a matter of a second or two, according to his testimony.
Jerry, one question real quick.
That's all he remembers.
As far as the other people, the sheriff and other people you talked to, people that were all around Travis at the time this happened, how do they feel about this case, and what were their opinions?
Well, the sheriff actually believed in the beginning, very, very much so, that the woodsman, first of all, had actually killed Travis. That was his first thought. They came back very excited, very agitated. So his first concern was that they had actually killed Travis. Another gentleman got into a fight with Travis and killed him intentionally in terms of a fight, or there had been an accident, a bad accident with one of the heavy wood cutting saws, and Travis had been killed by that, and they attempted to bury him. So they actually thought that the woodsman had actually killed him, according to the sheriff. That's why they were given polygraph tests at the time by Cy Gilson, who was at that time working for the Department of Public Safety in Arizona. So he gave him a polygraph test based on, did they kill Travis? Did they murder him? And the last question asked on a polygraph test, as asked by the sheriff, was, did you see what you believe to be a UFO? Well, they passed all questions in terms of not harming Travis, but also passed the question in terms of, did they actually see an object like a UFO? So once Travis was located in 5 days, the sheriff then said that he really believed them because they were so upset and agitated that they did see Travis struck by this beam of light from what they believed to be a UFO. However, he felt at that time he still didn't believe Travis was abducted and taken aboard the UFO. And that's where it stood for 17 years.
Okay, but now the sheriff, as far as the sheriff goes, you had a tape recording conversation with him not long ago.
Right.
What's his feeling now about...
His feeling now is since the polygraph test is he believes Travis was actually taken aboard the UFO. And this is 17 years later. And I think the reason he believes that is because he is certainly a believer of Cy Gilson, because he's known Cy Gilson now for at least 20 years. And he knows that Cy Gilson is a very objective person and certainly would not do anything to jeopardize these polygraph tests at all. And so he believes now that they passed the polygraph given by Cy Gilson, that he believes these gentlemen, these three gentlemen were telling the truth, and especially Travis, that he must have been taken aboard the UFO, because that's the questions he was asked. One of the questions on the test I forgot to mention was, did he wake up in a humid, damp atmosphere confronted by what appeared to be alien-type beings? And the answer was yes, and he passed that question.
Something you and I talked about a couple of times. In the movie, they portrayed the ufologists, whatever you want to call them.
Ufologists.
as being rather rude, in fact, more than a little rude.
Kind of nerdy, too, if I recall.
And throwing microphones in the face of Travis when he came back and what have you.
Pocket protectors.
But it's a fact of the matter is that we were invited to speak at the premiere of the movie, and you were there, and I was there, because of the treatment he received by NICAP, the forerunner of MUFON. Isn't that correct, or am I
crazy? Well, he had basically been treated very rudely by a, and
saucer,
I hate to say
watch,
this,
right.
By the organization that I belong to and have for 18 years, and that was Ground Saucer Watch. Bill Spaulding was the one that basically, in a sense, did not believe the case and was very critical of the case. Also, of course, as you know, Philip Klass was very critical of the case and did a lot of extensive investigation on the case and came up with a lot of incorrect assumptions and innuendos and stuff, as I found out later. But I think NICAP got too heavily involved, except to make a report in their bulletin 1 month acknowledging Philip Klass's and Bill Spaulding's work and more or less putting it out for their news subscribers to say, okay, here's the evidence provided by these gentlemen. Here's the what Travis is saying.
Watch out, photons!
Go ahead.
Yeah, one question here. As far as Philip Klass goes, I don't know if these fellows may not be aware of the listeners, but Philip Klass has always been a skeptic. In fact, he doesn't believe anything about any case. And one of the things that you told me about and that Travis and Mike were talking about, Philip Klass has a habit of throwing his wallet out and losing money to the UFO people on occasion. And on one particular occasion, he had a bet with Travis and all the woodcutters that they wouldn't take another lie detector test. And they took that bet.
How much was it?
$10,000. They took the bet, but according to what Jerry told me, Philip Klass backed out because if they passed the lie detector test, he'd have to admit that this case was a genuine case, and he would not sign on for that particular condition, I guess. Is that accurate, Jerry? Or?
Yeah, everything was basically arranged, Pat, with Cleese Baxter, a gentleman who still is active in the polygraph field today, to have this test done. And I think all the arrangements were made as who was going to pay for what and everything in the $10,000 bet made. But I think Mike had asked, and I think correctly so, that Philip agree, as you have said, Pat, to put a stipulation in the contract that if they agreed and passed the test, that he would acknowledge publicly that they had passed this test and state that he believed that their story to be true based on that test. And Philip Klass just can't afford to do that. He's written three or four books on against UFOs. He is known as the major national spokesman against UFOs, and to admit that even one case would possibly be valid would be like ending his career basically as a complete debunker, and he just couldn't afford to do that. So the bet was canceled based on that situation.
Yeah, well, one thing about that, what does it say for the quality of his true belief? I mean, if he was so sure of himself all these years,
well,
he certainly backed off when they got right down to the cold.
Well, yes,
chips,
he can't afford to make a, in my opinion, he can't afford to make a public statement that way and take the chance that they would have passed the test. And if we are to believe the test that were taken just recently here in February that I sponsored, then he would have lost that bet. And if that would have been the case, he would have had to make that public statement, and it just would have ruined his reputation.
All right, Jerry, let you and Pat be Siskel and Ebert. Thumbs up or thumbs down on the movie?
On a basis of 1 to 10, I give the movie about a 4 as an investigator.
Oh. I mean, thumbs. Thumbs up or thumbs down?
Me, personally, thumbs down.
Thumbs down?
Yeah.
Well, based
as an
on
investigator.
The, yeah,
entertaining,
the
I guess, for the
movie,
public,
I'd
but for me personally, thumbs
down,
down.
Actually, I mean, it's a good movie.
Is it a good movie to
as
take a girl to?
That's how we're looking.
It's a good entertaining movie. Not only is it entertaining, but it's factual to the extent that the story really did happen. But I'm saying as an investigator,
right,
and as looking down the road in terms of ufology and how this is going to help or hurt us, I'm going to have to give it a thumbs down.
Absolutely. That's the whole point.
We're looking for...
Does it get scary, though, so like a girl would jump in your lap or something?
You could say that. As we looked at the audience, my wife and I trying to, and we're going to be going to see it again, obviously for the benefit of ourselves to see the audience reaction again. But the first time and only time we've seen it, we've seen women, of course, you know, closing their eyes, putting their hands over their eyes, because there's about 12 minutes there of the abduction scenario on board that is very gruesome. I mean, it's unbelievable, to be honest with you. And it's very upsetting to a person like Pat and myself who have been in this business trying to bring people forth out of the woodwork who've had these experiences, who have not yet come forth, it's going to be very difficult to get these people to come forth once they see that movie.
If you take it just as a movie, of course it's entertainment to go, but the fact that so many things were distorted about what really took place, and we're after the truth, guys like Jerry and I, we want to get the facts. We'd like to see the facts represented as they are, and stand on their own or fall or whatever the case may be, and that's what didn't happen in the movie.
All right, Jerry, thanks a lot for staying up this late with us.
No problem. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Well,
we can catch his wife in a few minutes.
Phone number here is 749-1444. Jerry. We're still talking live with Pat Packard of the Mutual UFO Network. It looks like we're going to be talking about UFOs all night long. Like I said, this is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob. And Chris, are you a believer?
Of course I am.
Right away.
Wouldn't you be? If you smoked as much weed as I did and sat in cornfields?
You know it.
Oh, yeah. We'll be right back in a few minutes. 749-1444.
Sure, it's a nice evening to go for a drive. Look! Up in the sky! Saucers! Flying saucers! Ever-changing world, I'm gonna love you just the same. The ever-changing world.
The Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. It's 10 minutes to 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
The phone number here is 749-1444. That's 749-1444. Give us a call and tell us if you have any questions about UFOs or if you've actually seen one or been abducted. We want to hear from you.
We're talking to Pat Packard, State Section Director for the Mutual UFO Network. Now, Pat, here's something's been going on that I haven't been too familiar with until recently, and that's cattle, actual moo cows across the United States are being cut up.
It's some sort of a cosmic case of cow tipping.
Well, what it boils down to is you're behind the times, because that's been going on since the middle 60s. And essentially what you have...
So you're saying it's a hippie thing then, huh?
Not really. It has nothing to do with hippies. If it would, they would have arrested them by now. But they haven't found anyone to arrest, and there's been over 10,000 cases of it.
So what's going on with the cow?
Well, it's not only cattle. It's cats. For instance, in Plano, Texas, about a year ago, there were 80 cats mutilated.
Cats deserve...
House cats, essentially, pets. Went outside and never came back. But what's going on with the cattle, that's been going on since around 66. Some indications has gone on a few years earlier than that. And what it boils down to is you'll see tracks in a field or tracks in snow of an animal. The next day you'll find the body, no sign of a struggle, no tracks around it. The tracks in the snow have stopped dead. The body's 50 or 100 yards away or even further. Parts of the body are missing, the blood's missing, the eye's missing, part of the jaw's missing, some of the internal organs and the teats are taken off of them and other less, I don't know.
Okay, well, how do you know this isn't just like some punk kid running around with a sword or a knife or something?
Well, first of all, punk kids or any kid or any criminal leaves forensic evidence, and there isn't any. Second of all, it's done with a high laser type of heat. The University of Oregon studied some of the tissue from these things along with various crime labs. Missouri crime lab has studied it along with some others. As a matter of fact, it's going on in Alabama right now. But the bottom line is it was done with a laser type heat 15 to 20 years before we had access to lasers. So lasers came in the late 70s and early 80s. Even today, if you were to do something like that, you would have to have a generator the size of a double-sized freezer and a unit about the size of a large desk.
Have there ever been a sighting of a UFO corresponding with some of these cow mutilations being found?
Yes. UFOs have been sighted with them, and you also have what they call mystery helicopters. Helicopters are painted black. They don't make any sounds. Very common.
They don't have big golden arches painted on the bottom of them, do they?
No, no. As a matter of fact, the FAA is called into Alabama just about 2 weeks ago because of these helicopters. Agencies have investigated this, and I can give you names and places and deputies and what have you. For years and years, and if you talk to them, there's never an answer, there's never an arrest. I can't think of any other crime that's had 10 to 20,000 times been committed, and no one's been arrested, so that's the mystery.
749-1444 is the phone number here at the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show, where we're talking to Pat Packard, State Sectional Director of the Mutual UFO Network. And what evidence do you find the most believable in proving the existence of the UFOs? What makes you think that there are UFOs?
Well, there's a couple of studies that have been done. One's the Scandinavian study. If someone wants to call
sounded
in,
sounded to
me
whatever, like you said it pretty good. Scandinavian.
Hasendale, well, Scandinavia. It's in Scandinavia. And basically, what it involved is some fellows took some high tech equipment out to this particular valley. Spent a couple weeks out there where they're having a lot of UFO sightings and what have you. They had lasers, night vision equipment, radars, etc. And over that time period of about 2 weeks, they got 188 different lights, ship-type lights, whatever you want to call them, on film.
Isn't this up north where they have those, the northern lights?
Northern, it has nothing to do with the northern lights.
Okay, what was the other piece of evidence you'd like to look at?
Well, there's quite a few pieces of evidence.
You mentioned two.
Well, if you want to look at, there's a second study that was done by a professor at Missouri, And it's the same type of study they did in Scandinavia. They went out with a bunch of high-tech equipment in Missouri. They photographed about 156 unknown objects. So right there, it more or less proves there's something going on. We're not saying it's spaceships per se, but if you want to go to France, they have an arm of the police, the gendarme, that's called GPAN, and they study these type of things. And I think in 1980, they had a landing trace case, and they have access to a lot of scientists, something we didn't have in this country when we had these type of things going on. And the scientists examined the soil samples and grass samples and concluded that no earthly object essentially could have done the things that happened to the soil, crystallize it and so forth and so on. And the people that did that, by the way, the head of that particular organization, he was a very big skeptic when he got into it, but he had to admit there was no explanation and for the traces they found.
Good enough for the French, good enough for me. Go ahead, Clark, you're on with Chris and Rob and Pat Packard.
Hello?
Go ahead.
Yeah, Jerry and Pat, if the government of the United States or any other country ever makes contact with these aliens, do you think we'll ever discover what their purpose is and where they do come from?
Pat, you want to field that one?
Well, the question, you know, that's a good question. If they ever make contact, I think that's probably a long way in the future if it happens. The shock value of something like that right now would be just too great.
Didn't they just set up some new scientific radio astronomy thing where these guys are sitting around this radio telescope and monitoring radio waves all day long from outer space?
That's the SETI project. That's entirely...
I always got that mixed up with Bigfoot, you know, Yeti, SETI.
What's
that all about?
They're scanning the universe for radio signals, and there have been indications in the past, at least three separate times, that we received some sort of radio transmissions from outer space, as a matter of fact.
And they do have the Jack Benny show in the Andromeda Galaxy.
They must have it. I really don't know. There's a professor, and if I could think of his name, I would tell you it, but 1927 or 28, they received signals. I think 1963 was the other year. I don't really know.
Just guess, Pat. What do you think they want? What do you think they want? If there are people from other planets, other galaxies visiting us humble Earthlings, what do you think they want? Just a wild theory.
Okay.
You have to think about this every once in a while. What do you think they want?
Bud Light.
Right now our best guess is, based on abduction stories, is that they're doing some sort of crossbreeding with humans. And there's a lot of information and a lot of stories that
like humans
that.
With Venusians or something?
Humans with their species of aliens.
Oh, I saw this movie once where these guys went to the planet Venus and there were all these babes there. That's okay with me.
Could be. I don't know.
If that's the way it is, I'll volunteer. Clark, you there? He hung up. But we got another call coming in. 749-1444 is the phone number here at the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
And that's Pat.
Was the woman on spaceship with Travis Walton attractive?
I don't think there was a woman.
I thought he said that there was a woman.
Had, like,
well,
brown hair.
He saw some other beings on the ship, exactly who they were, you know, what they looked like.
Barbarella wasn't there, was she?
One of the, not really. He'd probably still be there if Barbarella was there.
All right. Are we ready for Scott? Jimbo, you ready for Scott? The lovely Jim has Scott ready to go. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah.
Hey, how you doing?
Jim, how are you guys doing?
Hey, we're doing okay.
Yeah, speaking of abductions, has there been any locally around here?
Yes.
This vicinity?
Well, didn't something happen in Kentucky with three women or something like that?
Well, that's a Liberty, Kentucky incident, but as far as he's asking, yeah, there are abductions. There's a network of people here in the city that get together and hold meetings. I don't know, say around here, around Cincinnati, there's probably about 300 people that are involved one way or the other.
Right around here, they've been abducted.
Absolutely.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And you said something about a mating thing, too.
Well, based on stories that have come back that are very detailed, that's part of it. I mean, I could go through the whole story from beginning to end, and if you like, I'll do that. But essentially, they're taken on board a ship. They're laid down. There are four small gray aliens around them. They start at the feet. They scrape the feet. They check all the toes, the ankles, they move them.
Foot fetishists, eh?
Basically. Yeah. They move up to the calf and usually take a scoop out of the calf. Of some. Then they'll check the knee and they'll go right up on doing that. Check the stomach and whatever you have. Turn you over and check your back, what have you. To shorten it up a little bit, there's a second type of alien that's taller. He comes over and does sort of a mind scan operation on him. The net result of it is sooner or later they implant something in these people, a tracking device. We're not sure.
Like how Marlon Perkins clamps one of those things on a wildebeest ear, something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah, but he always had someone do it for him.
We basically, there's four of these implants that have been recovered. One of them's at MIT right now. It's been there for Lord knows how long. Dr. Pritchard at MIT is looking at it. He will not say that it's earthly, and he won't say it's extraterrestrial, and that's the way it's been for some time. He says something to the effect, well, we don't know everything that's on Earth, so I can't say that it's not definitely from Earth, you know. So that's the bottom line.